Middays with Mannix and Mannix, Jeff and Taylor, back on the microphones, and it is Friday, which means it is time to do our main high school sports weekend preview, and for that, we are joined by our good friend. He is now the guy behind Hoffer's High School Sports. Michael Hoffer joins us once again. Michael, we're into full swing now for the spring season. How are things?
Yeah, we're into May. Crazy to think. And the next thing you know, it'll be June and we'll be talking about playoffs. But that's how quickly these things happen. And no, things are going well. The weather's been cooperative up until today anyway. And you've got to love any good days you can get in April and early May.
Yeah, and I had the pleasure to be at a beautiful game earlier starting on the softball field. I was able to cover a game against Noble. Sun was shining then that day and the bats were definitely out for Cheverus. But it was my first look at them. Tell you what, Michael, I don't know if much has changed from last year. After watching them last year and getting a chance to see them again this year, whether it was Anna Goodman or it was Sadie Collins, I mean, they were hitting everything.
Right, and you know, when you talk about Cheverus softball, the first thing that always pops to mind is their incredible pitching and, you know, how great Addison DeRoche is. But those bats have really been on fire early on, and they scored 19 runs the other day against Scarborough. They didn't even score, I think, the first four innings, and their bats completely roared to life. And yeah, the game you mentioned, the ball was flying out of the little ballpark there, and usually the wind's blowing in, but I don't think it would have mattered. I got to see highlights of both of those home runs and included them in my newsletter this week. So some pretty mighty pokes, and yeah, Cheverus has not missed a beat, and I don't even know if Addison DeRoche has fully gotten up to speed on the mound yet, but they're going to be tough to beat. They've got some big tests coming up, though. I've got Gorham coming up on Monday. Gorham has probably emerged as the third best team in Class A South, so that will certainly be an interesting test. And then the following week, you get the first of the two, probably three, Cheverus-Windham showdown. So, yeah, so far so good for the defending champion Stags. And, you know, dare I say, I mean, they might even be stronger than they were a year ago.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned Gorham, because I know this has been something you've been talking about a little bit there on the softball side, because this is kind of a nice little run for that Gorham Rams program. What is working so well right now for them that is making them one of the top three teams, you think, in A-South?
Well, I think, you know, for starters, they have a very potent lineup, and, you know, they put the ball in play, they score runs. I got the chance to see them on opening day over at South Portland, and you know, they can really hit the ball, and this year's team has just been bolstered. They really needed a pitcher to come into the program and step up, and Bella McBrady came over from Deering, and she's really stepped right in and done a great job and done everything that they had hoped for. And she, you know, she out-dueled Julia Pike of Kennebunk the other day. So, I mean, that right there is a testament to how good a pitcher she is, and it really gives them the opportunity to believe that they can compete with Windham and with Cheverus when the time comes. So they're actually right at the moment, they're atop the heel point standings. I don't put a whole lot of stock in what the heel point standing look like on the second day of May, but, you know, I know Gorham's got to be very pleased with the way they started. So, it would be nice to see a few other teams in the mix here because, you know, I think, you know, it's clear that Cheverus and Windham are as good as advertised, but, you know, if Gorham can certainly be there and, you know, Kennebunk certainly on a given day can pitch their way and be competitive with anybody. You know, we'll see if anyone else emerges as the contenders, but it's clear that Class A South is pretty top-heavy.
Yeah, and looking at some of the other schools that I know you've been covering, teams like Freeport, Yarmouth, NYA, all off to some pretty hot starts, I'd say, too.
Yeah, you know, Class B South is going to be interesting. Freeport, it's funny, they've had to come from behind twice in their first three wins, and they've been able to do so. I think they just gained a lot of confidence from the run that the team last year made. York, of course, is still there leading the way. They're the team that, you know, whoever wants to get through that region, ultimately you have to find a way to solve York, and good luck doing that. Yeah, Yarmouth's off to a really pleasant start. You know, Greeley was off to a great start. They had won their first four games. They went to Yarmouth the other day, and Yarmouth put up 18 runs against them. So, you know, the new-look Clippers certainly gaining some early confidence. And, you know, Greater Gloucester's always seems like we always talk about them come softball season. I think they'll be heard from as well. Lake Region had Freeport on the ropes the other day and couldn't close that game out. So there's probably more contenders in Class B South and Class A South, but, you know, until proven otherwise, it's York's region to lose, and they've got to be considered the favorite. And, you know, like you said, with NYA winning back-to-back Class B state titles, even with a lot of new faces this year, they have not skipped a beat. So, you know, the programs that are used to winning, presuming they're not decimated by graduation, it's not a big surprise to see them in contention again the following season.
Yeah, and of course, I want to note one school here, too, in softball that's maybe from a little bit of a lower class that I know you've got ranked in your poll in NYA. Really good run so far from the Panthers, and you know what's working so well for them right now?
Well, what's working is they're putting up a ton of runs,
yeah.
And in fact, they had a dramatic comeback win over St. Dom's recently, where they came back to win 14-13. I think they were down 10 runs in that game, but you know they scored 63 runs in four games, and when you do that, you're going to be dominant. And you know they'll get tested a little bit as the season goes on. They have a really interesting interclass game against Freeport later in the year, and they actually beat Freeport last year on their way to the title. So I think that, you know, Coach Ricky Doyon was a little bit worried that maybe they'd come back to the pack a little bit after, you know, losing some top-notch players, but it has not proved to happen. And as long as they're swinging the bats like this, they're certainly going to score a lot of runs and be in position to make another deep playoff run in June.
Yeah, well, and on the baseball diamond, Michael, you've been able to see quite a few pitching performances this week. I know you posted about a no-hitter. You got to see a one-hitter last night, or I should say yesterday, and I think we'll start there because I saw the pictures you post, too, from Jeff, courtesy of him, with all the scouts that were there for Wyatt. He's obviously headed to Vanderbilt University, as we've talked with you about. Can you tell us about his performance? You got to see him up close and personal along with a bunch of MLB scouts. Is this kid the real deal?
He certainly is, and you know it was an impressive event. I mean, you see all these major league scouts with their radar guns behind the plate, and you know it's hard not to get caught up in all that. But you know Wyatt Neto, he does a great job of just keeping everything in perspective. I was impressed with his maturity. He's a huge kid. He's 6'6". He throws in the 90s. He's every bit that he's made up to be. And yes, he's planning to go to Vanderbilt, but I know there's a lot of major league teams that are interested in him, and you know we'll see if he gets drafted next month. And if he does, you know he might have a decision to make. But he certainly has an extremely bright future. And you know, Falmouth did a good job battling him. They drew a few walks. They actually got the first hit that he's allowed all season later in the game. But you know, Gorham was able to pull out that win. And you know, this Gorham team with Neto coming back, he was away at a prep school last year, so his return to Gorham, you're playing with his childhood friends again. It makes for a very formidable team, and if they can score any runs for him, you know they're always going to be right there. So, that show was fun to watch, no question about it. And if you get a chance to see him pitch, I strongly encourage you to do so, because we don't see arms like that very often that throw in the 90s. And you know, he struggled a little bit with control early, but like all great pitchers, if you don't get him early, you're not going to get him. And he really settled in, wound up striking out 13. So. He is the real deal, and you know, Class A South has a lot of really good teams, guys. And you look at the heels right now. There's a lot of teams with zeros in the loss column. You know, South Portland, who's won two of the last four straight state titles, is undefeated. Scarborough, the reigning champs, off to a good start. Thornton Academy's off to a very good start too. Biddeford's off to a pleasant surprise at 3-0, and you know, Falmouth, I think, will be hearing from them as the season goes on. I think Severus is a lot better than they've been in the past, so. A lot of teams that are in the mix. Stanford has beaten Gorham. They're the only team that's beaten Gorham. So, you know, like I say, a lot of teams that are looking forward to, you know, facing these better teams and these better pitchers. And, you know, that's the byproduct of this. You know, not only do we sit and marvel at a great pitcher like Neto, but, you know, these other teams really get up for the opportunity to go up against and measure themselves against someone that's going to be pitching at a higher level in the not-too-distant future. And it just makes for a great atmosphere when you have a game like that.
Yeah, it looks like you've had some real nice baseball games to cover here recently. I want to turn to girls lacrosse, because one thing that you pointed out in your newsletter this week is that a couple of girls reached the 100 goal mark in their career, one at Cheverus, one at Freeport. Can you tell us a little bit about that and those players and those accomplishments?
Right, yes. Yeah. So Sophia St. John at Cheverus reached the 100-goal mark the other day. And, I mean, that's a great accomplishment in and of itself. But her five goals helped Cheverus beat Yarmouth for the first time in program history. So, you know, a huge seismic victory for the Stags, who look like they're going to be one of the contenders in Class A this year. It looks like Kennebunk's off to a great start. You know, I think at this point they've probably got to be considered the favorite, but there's a lot of other teams in that hunt, including Yarmouth, you know, is always going to be at their best come playoff time. But you know, Cheverus lost one game to Thornton Academy. They were down one of their best players. They lost another of their players to two yellow cards, you know, early in that game. So I'm sure they'd love another crack at TA, who's also off to a great start. They're a really fun young team to watch, and they're only going to get better as the season goes on. But, yeah, I mean, what St. John did the other day for Cheverus, I mean, that's a win that really can propel a program onto great things. And, you know, Cheverus has been kind of hanging around the periphery of contention the last few years. I think they might be ready to take the next step. And then, you know, you look at Class B, Freeport, I think, is the favorite there. And Mia Levesque joined her teammate Lana DeRusso with 100 goal scorers the other night in their win over Massabesic. So Freeport finally found a way to solve their nemesis, Greeley, last week. They're certainly clicking early on, and they've got to be viewed as the favorite. You know, Class C's got defending champion Wainfleet. They're off to a 3-0 start. So a lot of the familiar names and teams have gotten off to strong beginnings, and we've got a lot of big games to come, though, guys.
Yeah, for sure. And I just want to go back to baseball because I want to ask about that no-hitter a little bit.
Yeah.
And, of course, one of the best performances of the week there from Keeler and that Greeley team. And they get a little bit of revenge, right, because it was an agonizing
yeah.
B-South loss last year. So to get that no-hitter, Michael, and I'm interested, too, like, because the no-hitter is so rare. How many times have you been able to cover these?
I'd say there's been a handful. And, a lot more prevalent in softball probably than baseball. It's hard. Seen a lot of close calls, a lot of no-hitters broken up late, but not a ton of them. And you could just tell as that game went on the other day that, you know, Keeler Vogt had it going. And he had actually had a perfect game going into the sixth inning, and he wound up losing a pinch hitter. He got ahead one strike, and then he threw four straight balls. And I know he was upset about that. And a lot of times, you'll see someone lose a perfect game and maybe lose a little concentration. And he needed a great defensive play from his center fielder, Luke Piper, who made an incredible diving catch to rob Alec Gagnon of a sure hit there in the bottom of the sixth. And, of course, Alec Gagnon is the one that broke Greeley's heart in last year's regional final with the two-out, two-strike, two-run triple that improbably turned that game around. So, yeah, a little bit of sweet revenge for Greeley. Obviously, a great pitching performance. You know, everyone was thrilled with Keeler for throwing the no-hitter. But, you know, Greeley had lost three straight to Yarmouth not only last year but the year before. So they've been knocked out of the postseason 2 years running. And, a little bit of revenge. And now Greeley turns around and has another big rivalry game today, weather permitting, where they're going to play Cape Elizabeth, their longtime rival, in another playoff rematch. So I'm hoping the rain holds off and get a chance to cover that one. But, yeah, there's been a lot of great action on the diamond early on.
Yeah, certainly has been. And I'll ask about one of the other teams there that we mentioned here. Of course, Yarmouth, really, really good program here, but they've started 0-3 this year. What can you tell us about them? Is this just a slow start for them, or maybe a lot of roster turnover this year?
Well, it's definitely a lot of roster turnover, and I would say the record's a little bit misleading
right.
to you guys. I mean, you look, they went down to York, who's one of the best teams, and York is always a very hard place to play. Yarmouth scored 13 runs in most games in most places. That's a
enough.
Sure victory, but it wasn't. And the Cape Elizabeth game the other day, they came from down four runs early, and then wound up losing by a run at home. No shame in that. And then Greeley, they just ran into a red-hot pitcher and a team that was determined to get some revenge. So the schedule will lighten up a little bit. I think you're going to see Yarmouth certainly come along as the season goes along. And, you know, the Clippers and their coach, Mark Halstead, they're not concerned about where they are in late April, early May. They're all about where they're going to be in June. And I guarantee you, come June, no one is going to want to see them on their side of the bracket because they might not have the record of the last couple of years. But this team has a lot of good young pieces. It's just getting out there, getting some playing time, and, you know, learning from these close losses, because they've shown, you know, what I would take from it if I were Yarmouth is that we can go toe-to-toe with these top teams. We just have to limit mistakes and find a way to win these games, and I think they will as the season goes on.
Yeah, and I know we touched on all the 100 career goal accolades that happened on the girls' side. On the boys' side, it might not have been as historic, but we did see Falmouth kind of continue their run. I couldn't believe it when I read your newsletter, and for anybody who hasn't, HoffersHighSchoolSports.com. Go check it out. Subscribe. It's awesome. And especially this newsletter that you've been doing, Michael. It's amazing. But you wrote in this that Falmouth has scored 60 goals and only conceded 9 in their last 3 games. And you and I have been talking about this team a lot. And I'm so excited to talk about them all year because we talk about where they could rank them out potentially being one of the best lacrosse teams we've ever seen in the state. This is a good start.
I can't imagine that they could ask for much of a better start, honestly, at this point. I mean, this is the team everyone expects. And, you know, let's not forget, probably the late third quarter, the fourth quarter of these games, they're taking their foot off the gas pedal and making a lot of substitutions. So a lot of these goals are getting scored in the first two, three quarters. You know, Lord knows what they could do if they really kept the pedal to the metal for 48 minutes. But, you know, Falmouth, at this point, they're kind of playing against history. And I know they don't like to talk about it or focus on that, but, you know, people like us do. And, you know, you look back at these great teams of yore, and there have been some fantastic teams that I've covered over the years. But, you know, this team, presuming they continue on this pace, they're going to be atop the list. And they've still got a lot of big games to come, though, guys. I mean, don't get me wrong, and everyone's going to get fired up to play them. They have to beat Cape Elizabeth twice. The Yarmouth, who's really emerged as a terrific team in Class B, I'd argue they're the second-best team in the state right now, especially after their impressive win over York. You know, Falmouth's got to get through them. They still have to go to South Portland. They still have to go to TA. I've got to believe they're going to get tested at some point. I don't know what the record is. At some point, I'll have to go look for the most amount of Mercy Rule victories in a season. But that might be something that Falmouth's dancing with before all is said and done.
Yeah, I tell you what, they've been very, very good in the early going. Yeah, Falmouth sports doing big things. Hard to imagine, right? Let's ask a little bit too, because of course there are a couple other sports that are underway now in the high schools as well, and that's the tennis and outdoor track. Is there any storylines developing in the early part of those seasons that you're looking for?
I mean, the only thing I would mention would be, you know, Falmouth boys tennis. Their long time coach Bob McCulley has finally stepped down. You know, he's in his 80s. He's had some health issues, and you know, he had that program as an absolute powerhouse for decades. And Jamie Hilton, who many of us know is an assistant boys basketball coach over at Falmouth, has stepped in and gotten the Navigators off to a really good start. So that's kind of an interesting storyline to follow. And, you know, it seems like Falmouth's in the running for a state title every year, and we'll see if that continues now with the coaching change. But when you coach in a town with a couple of country clubs, it certainly helps. And Falmouth won all of its matches so far. They got a close call from Thornton Academy yesterday, but they found a way to win. But, you know, that's certainly something that jumps out. And, you know, will Waynesfleet be able to win a millionth straight Class C championship? Can Yarmouth do it again in Class B? You know, those are probably storylines to talk about early on. It's certainly, you know, the teams that are traditionally there seem to be right there again. And, you know, it won't be long, actually, so we're talking about the singles championships there, and then that's the first team sport to be awarded championships come June, actually with outdoor track the week before. So it's a very short season, and you know, I think we're just going to be talking about a lot of the familiar things.
The annual Waynesfleet discussion, death taxes and Waynesfleet tennis winning state championships. Just yeah, seems like they are.
Set your watch by it.
Yeah. it's so funny. When you said them, I go, oh, my God, that's right. How many have they won in a row? So like 15?
I think it's 15, yeah. 15 or 16. Yeah, I should know this, but no, it's been a lot. It's been a lot for sure, and there's no end in sight. And I mean, I know a lot of people argue they shouldn't be in Class C, but that's where they're classified.
Yeah,
and you know, they certainly in the regular season they go up against the best teams from other classes too. So yeah, it's actually 16 in a row and counting. So they're going for 17 this year.
Wow. Michael Hoffer from Hoffer's High School Sports with our main high school sports weekend preview. Thanks so much for being here again. We always appreciate you doing it. We'll talk again next Friday.
Sounds great, guys. Enjoy the weekend as much as Mother Nature will allow, and look forward to chatting again next week.
All right. Sounds good. Again, Michael Hoffer from Hoffer's High School Sports. We'll return to end hour two. It's a finally Friday edition of Middays with Mannix and Mannix.